Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Bald Men on Campus, an ESPN podcast hosted by Jay Billis, LaPhonso Ellis, and Seth Greenberg. These ESPN basketball personalities give you an all-access pass inside the world of college basketball, talking to the biggest names in the sport. That's Bald Men on Campus. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, we are so excited about our new weekday studio show, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews. Tipping off the start of the NBA season with exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Janae Ogumike, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Adrian Wojnarowski, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today, 3 Eastern, noon Pacific, on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap, and also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about some new music that dropped. Also going to hear about your stories about people trying to get themselves fired like Odell Beckham seemed to do. But first. Oh, man, NFL action. All right, so this is one of those days where you look up at your league pass and you realize there aren't actually any good games. I feel like this has been happening a little bit more frequently, like we're in the bye week portion of the season. So that happens, but you had, like, interesting things happen, like Aaron Rodgers came back. Gabe, I don't know if you saw this, but after the game, they were asking Aaron Rodgers some questions, and he said he had been a long week for him, which understandably it had been. Like, regardless of whether or not you agree with Aaron Rodgers, having the whole nation say you a dumbass, and not every single person in the nation, but still, right? Everybody say you a dumbass. I can't imagine that that's a pleasant thing. And then I don't know if you saw this, but what might have then be a complicating factor for Aaron Rodgers is his pops jumped up and said that he supported Aaron's stance. And I don't know if that'll make Aaron want to change his mind or not. Like, you know how every now and then you look up and you see somebody think the exact same thing you do, and you're like, yo, I need to go reevaluate this. I don't know if I want to be on that same team. Well, that's where Aaron Rodgers wound up. But he was talking about how tired he was after the game, and he's putting it entirely in the context of, you know, the stuff, right? The interview and everything else. I want to throw something out here, and you guys let me know if I'm tripping. Is it possible that he was so tired because he had COVID-19? Like, guys, I don't know if you have talked to anybody who's had COVID-19, but it seems to have an effect on your wind after the fact, right? Not everybody complains about it or talks about it necessarily, but just about everybody I know talks about when they done had it after the fact. It's a little harder for them to get going like they used to. Maybe that was it, Aaron Rodgers. I don't know if anybody asked him about that at the time, but one thing about a cat like Aaron Rodgers is after he told us he took the horse stuff, right? And he told us that he was basically signing up on all these basically COVID ain't that big a deal programs. I mean, because that was kind of the subtext of what he was saying. I felt like, even though he didn't say it explicitly, then you can't admit like, yo, gotta be honest, man, COVID kind of kicked my ass. You know what I mean? Like, once you decided that you went on that side, you can't come and be honest about it and be like, yo, man, this was actually not the easiest week in the world for me. Thing about football players that I've learned in my travels in this business is how much pain they don't complain about, like, ever. Like, retired football players are in pain a significant portion of the time. They just ain't never going to tell you about it. I worked with Leroy Hoard in Miami. He worked at the radio station that Dan worked at when he did local down there. And I remember years before that Leroy had done an Outside the Lines feature just about like the headaches and the pain and all of that stuff. Man, I see Leroy every time I go up to that station. I ain't never seen somebody look happy every time I see him quite like Leroy. And I don't think that all that pain just vanished. You know what I mean? Like, football players can truck. So like, Aaron Rodgers can do another interview with Pat McAfee and trucked through it, that don't mean he wasn't feeling bad. You know, like he ain't hit us with one of them super coughs or nothing like that. But that don't mean he wasn't doing bad. But you can't tell nobody you're doing bad after you've come out as that guy. What guy? That guy. You can't do it. It's just not an option. You know what I mean? But he played well. Russell Wilson came back. He did not really play well. It's been a bit up and down for the last couple of years, actually, with Russell Wilson. One of those things we don't talk about. Like, we weird with quarterback. Russell Wilson is a guy that he won that Super Bowl early, and then he went to another one. I think most of us feel like we can pretty confidently say right now that Russell Wilson will wind up in the Hall of Fame. Like, that's where he's going to go. I think he's a very, very, very good player. But I know that as the year went on last year, he wasn't as good as he was at the start when he was just absolutely on fire. But he's a dude that we don't, like, really reevaluate. And I don't know why, because it's not like he really has a hive. You know, like, he's not one of these people that's been doubted since he got to the league. And so people have this, like, investment in saying he's good or even saying that he's bad. Like, we don't really go in either direction on that. But it is, for me, kind of interesting when I go and look at him and be like, yeah, I don't actually know how good he still is. And you know, one way that you can definitely know that you don't know how good he still is, how tired the Seahawks are of him and his stuff. You don't hear that about the ones that are like they feel like are really playing well. You know, they feel like, yo, you blaming this on the offensive line, but you be holding the ball even when they block. You know what I mean? Like, he's in that kind of place. But it's quarterback stuff. I don't even necessarily know if we get any real logic that holds up when it comes to quarterback stuff. Remember last week when y'all was so sure that Baker Mayfield was better without Odell Beckham? Y'all remember that? Like, that was the thing. But what was lost in the course of that game was Baker Mayfield threw a pass to Donovan Peoples-Jones that I want to say went for something like 50 yards or whatever. Outside of that pass, Baker Mayfield completed like 50 yards worth of completions to wide receivers. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Donovan Peoples-Jones had a 60-yard reception. 60 yards on that reception. After that, wide receivers were catching in the 50s. Jarvis Landry, 3 for 11 yards, for example. That's what it was. Now, here's why I'm bringing this up. Mayfield, again, did not play well in this game where they got their doors blown off by the Patriots. Did not play well. Jarvis Landry, 4 catches. For 26 yards. Donovan Peoples-Jones, 1 catch for 16 yards. Rashard Higgins, 0 catches for, let me add this up, 0 yards. I feel like in the course of our Odell Beckham discussion, we kind of probably should have noted that he wasn't the only person that Baker Mayfield was having trouble throwing the ball to. What if? It's a kooky notion, but I'm going to throw it out here. What if Baker Mayfield actually has trouble getting the ball to all the wide receivers? Like, maybe I'm crazy. Gabe, they are 10 games into the season, the Browns are, okay? And I'm looking at these stats right here at ESPN.com. I'm assuming they have been updated to include all 10 games, okay? Their number one receiver is David Njoku, tight end, with 352 yards. Their number two receiver, Donovan Peoples-Jones, with 330 yards. You know who their number three receiver is? That's right. Odell Beckham with 232 yards. Yes. 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 How did we not talk about any of this before? And I'm including myself in this, right? Like, I didn't do it either. We got, like, Odell gets so much attention and so much discussion that it does come back. Well, I guess this is the part I always talk about. Baker Mayfield just ain't that good. As simple as that. And the Browns are in a trick bag because they got this win now roster around him, but they're not that good. And you can't just reasonably assume you can go get another guy like him. You know what I mean? Like, you just can't be sure. Like, oh yeah, there's another one out there. Okay, we're going to get him. But so I go back. Is Baker Mayfield really better without Odell Beckham? Or is Baker Mayfield just what he is all the damn time? Fair question to ask. Another quarterback that got in our ups and downs of how we talk about quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes. So first thing about that game, I don't remember if we talked about it on this show, and maybe you've heard me talk about this, but one thing I always thought about with the Raiders going to Las Vegas was there was a high potential that they would be playing 16 road games. Right. And so the thing for me was this. They were new to Las Vegas, okay? Now, there's a bunch of Raiders fans that's going to jump on a plane from L.A. or jump on a plane from Oakland or Fresno or wherever, right? Southwest Airlines, get themselves to Vegas and go to them games, right? Because it's not too hard for them to do. Like, for people who don't know much on West Coast stuff, people in California going to Vegas all the time for whatever it is that comes up, right? It wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that that's how they get down. But if you are a Raiders fan, you have 8 or 9 chances to see your team play in Las Vegas. If you are, say, a Chiefs fan, you have 1 chance to see your team play in Las Vegas. So who do you think is going to go harder for the tickets? It's going to be the Chiefs fans, right? And so with that, I was like, yo, you're going to have a neutral site. Like when the Cowboys first opened that stadium, and it was basically neutral site games for years, because people wanted to come to the new stadium. The Raiders out here false starting on third down because the crowd is so loud. Because the other team fans are getting so loud. And my man Tashawn Reed at the Athletic, he talked about this. They've had these false start problems at home in part because the other teams get so loud, right? So anyway, just want to throw that out there. But Mahomes was out there killing them. Killing them. Killing them. Did the league no longer figure him out? Remember that day? Apparently things had been figured out. Like with football, I've told this before, our memories are so short in football, and we just completely ignore how fluid so many things can be and ups and downs and little things get thrown off or things that have happened with our favorite players in the past. Like I've talked about before, basically every quarterback has had one of those years like Mahomes' year has been so far this year. It just happens. I don't really understand why. Quarterback is really like the only position in football where that happens, where you just have an off year, right? Like normally if a dude has an off year, the next year is going to be worse, right? It goes up and then goes down. Like that's how it works. Now we'll be talking about here. Mahomes is out here looking just like Patrick Mahomes. They was in last place like 2 weeks ago. They in first place now. And NFL media machine, man, we'd be ready to hit that switch and just go all the way in the other direction. Yeah, Patrick Mahomes. Who were those people that were saying all this stuff? You were the same person. It was you. I was listening to you. You said the same thing. I mean, this game is different, man, right? That's the best I got for you. Oh, and how I almost forget the best quarterback story. Welcome back to you, Cam Newton, right? Because I think Cam signed right after we had recorded Foxworth Friday. And it's a fascinating thing because Cam Newton has always been a polarizing figure with the Panthers fan base. And I had people hit me up and be like, no, the fans here love him. No, there are fans there who love him. The fans wouldn't go that far. Would I say that the fans hate him? No, I would not. But the relationship that they had with Cam Newton is more conditional than it is in most places. And somebody asked me why I was talking about that. There was a tolerance for Cam in Charlotte when he was excellent. But excellence was basically the standard. And that's how it's been with just about everybody. But even there in the hometown, excellence is the standard. But the thing is, Cam just one of them dudes, right? When he's around, it's an event. It's a thing, right? Just the magnitude of that dude and his personality are different than most people are. And so for the Panthers, dude, I don't know if Cam's got anything left. I don't know how anybody can purport to say that they know if Cam has anything left. It didn't matter. They brought that dude in on one goal line play, he scored a touchdown. They brought that dude in on another goal line play, he threw a touchdown. They asked him how much of the playbook he knew. He said 2 touchdowns worth. And that simple statement right there is why it's welcome back, Cam Newton, right? Because what's happened with the Panthers since Cam Newton is there wasn't really a reason to care. Like, you go and get Teddy Bridgewater, that's not really giving you a reason to care. You go get Sam Darnold, and then he turns out to stink like he stunk before. That don't really give you a reason to care. Now, is Cam going to become their starting quarterback and lead them to the playoffs? It's possible, because go look at the bottom of the NFC. You know, they added the extra playoff team. They can get in, you know? Like, they can sneak in on the back end. It doesn't mean they'll be good, but they can sneak in on the back end. But I don't even think it matters now. Like, they got a moment. Cam got a moment. The fans got a moment. And that happens sometimes where all that matters in one of these reunions or bringing somebody in is just you got something that you're not going to forget. And even though Kyler Murray didn't play, the Cardinals were the best team in the league, basically, coming into this point. and the Panthers out there with their backup quarterback and Cam Newton behind him got a win. And I was just so happy for the people that were happy. Like, I really, really was, right? And it also reminds me, in case you want to feel a little bit old, Gabe, you can now get into the feel a little bit old pile also. Cam Newton is like the dude these dudes grew up watching. You know? Like, he's been in the NFL. This is year 11. The young dudes in the league were watching him as pre-teenagers. Like, he is OG status in the NFL at this point. He means something now that he didn't mean. Like, once Allen Iverson got to an OG place, you notice that the whole discussion around him changed because the people who were young when he was young became older, and so they don't view him nearly as judgmentally as the previous generation had because they see far more of themselves in him. That's what Cam Newton is. Like, that's the space and spot that he's in. That was dope to see, man. I was happy for him. I was happy for them folks in Charlotte. Just enjoy this moment. You ain't promised literally anything else. By the way, next week, Panthers play the Washington football team. I have no idea who's playing quarterback for them. Is Tyler Heineke, is he healthy? I think he is. Okay, he going to be out there. Ron Rivera and Scott Turner have needed a quarterback. And they decided to go with Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tyler Heineke. And even after Fitzpatrick was out of there, they still did not call Cam Newton. I'm going to just tell you this right now. If there's ever a day that Cam Newton want to get it done, it's going to be this day. And if he cannot get it done this day, he really just might be cooked. Or the whole concept of want to don't matter, because I can't imagine how bad he wants to stick it to Ron Rivera. I would too.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You know how sometimes people just kind of be hating? And I mean this in the music game. This happens from time to time. So when Kanye had Yeezus coming out in 2013, and Yeezus, I didn't enjoy Yeezus. I didn't think Yeezus was good. I know that some of you are a lot more unhappy with your lives than I am, and Yeezus speaks to you. Yeezus did not do very much for me at all. But it was during the NBA Finals, and I think Yeezus was supposed to come out on a Tuesday after one of them Sunday games. And bruh, Jay-Z dropped the Samsung commercial for Magna Carta, Holy Grail, on that Sunday. Like, it's as Kanye trying to get this thing cracking. And then boom, that happened. Like, come on, man. You knew what that dude was doing right then. You knew what time it was. Here you go. If I remember right, when Cardi B dropped her album, I think that Drake dropped a single that night. That's like, oh, come on, man. You know you hating right now. Like, I know it's a game. I know it's competitive. You know you hating right now. And so Bruno Mars and my man Anderson .Paak have been, I don't even know if it's Pac or Pac, to be honest. I ain't never had nobody give me a definitive answer on that. But anyway, they were putting out that Silk Sonic album, right? And that plan was coming. The next thing I know, I look up and your girl Taylor Swift say, oh, I'm dropping an album at midnight. She should have said two. I'm dropping an album at midnight too. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, oh, come on now. You knew what time it was on this. But that's the thing now with the game and how people do with these albums or whatever. If you so decide, you can just be like, yo, let's go rain on their parade. Now, I made the point that it was a two America situation at midnight. You're going to have the people jamming that Tay-Tay, and you're going to have the people jamming that Silk Sonic, and people like Bruno Mars is a big pop star, da-da-da, all this stuff. I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I just do feel like ain't a whole lot of people torn on which one they gonna listen to first. You feel what I'm saying? Like, even if you are a person who will listen to them both, you know which one you was going to first. You ain't have to be like, oh, I'm just not sure which way to go. Nah, you knew which one you was going first. And that split right there is, shall we say, two Americans. I have never gotten into the Taylor Swift thing. I don't ever say nothing bad about Taylor Swift because I literally never listen to any of her music. I feel like the one song I know that I've heard is that Shake It Off. That's her, right? Like she do that. I feel like, why didn't she do a remix with the Youngbloods? Their first single was called Shake 'Em Off. And I feel like a Taylor Swift Youngbloods collaboration on Shake 'Em Off could have been really cool. But it's two Americans, so Tay don't think like that. I feel you. I see which way it goes. But I went with the Silk Sonic. Now, if you know me and my music stuff, you know that Anderson is my dude. That's my favorite person working right now. Like, you know, I don't even know if I can call him young anymore. He's my favorite person working. I even embarrassed myself a couple of weeks ago. So I got a partner who does some music work. And one day he got me on a FaceTime with Anderson real quick. And I got to profess my love and all of this stuff, right? But for some reason, I thought he recognized who I was in the screen. You know what I'm saying? So I see him a couple of weeks ago in New York. And I was like, I'm going to go holler at him. And it don't take long for me to be like, nope, this person doesn't know who I am. And since this person doesn't know who I am, I have officially become that guy. What guy? That guy. And it's a particular that guy because it's a that guy that I personally can't stand. I hate when people do that to me. I went and did that to somebody else. Now, it's why I have empathy for people when they do it with me, right? I get it. I understand, right? Like, if you think talking to me is a big deal, you can't assume that there's going to be another opportunity, right? And you mean well, as I meant well in all of this, but it was halfway through, I was like, ugh. It's like the time I saw Dr. J at the airport, we was on the same flight, and I tried to talk to him afterward. It became very clear to me that at 4:30 Eastern on weekdays, he was not watching Highly Questionable. He was completely unaware. Never assume, guys. That's the moral of that story. But anyway, so he's my dude. And I find Bruno Mars to be enjoyable. No shade. I'm not a fan. Like, I'm not like into Bruno Mars in that way. But I get like, why other people are. And I think he makes good stuff by and large. But I'm not like that dude. And so they decided to put an album out together. And I'm like, yo, I'll check this. Because I'm like, Bruno Mars, he can't mess it up. Like, his quality control is high. Even if I'm not the biggest fan, he's not going to mess it up. And he's working with one of my favorites. Cool. We'll do this. And then they put them first two singles out, the Leave the Door Open and then the Skate Joint. And then they put out the Smoking Out the Window. And I was like, ah. So it's clear that Bruno Mars is steering this ship. And me, personally, I would prefer if the more creative person were steering the ship. Because Bruno Mars, to me, is like a modern version of Lenny Kravitz in the sense he is very talented, not especially creative. What's his name? Donald Glover, Childish Gambino. It's very similar. And so, like, to me, this album they put out, this Silk Sonic album, is very similar to the Childish Gambino Awaken My Love album in that it sounds really good. And it sounds like a bunch of stuff somebody else already did. But it sounds really good. You see what I'm saying? Like, there are two different discussions to be had. Like, do I enjoy the record? Yes. Is it good? Yes. Is it well done? Yes. Is it creative and inventive? No. But that was never the goal, right? The point was never for this to be inventive, is that they put together basically a series of what is called pastiches. And so you're wondering, what is a pastiche? I'll give you an example of a pastiche. D'Angelo's Untitled, How Does It Feel? Is a pastiche of a Prince song, right? Like, it's very similar and like a fairly obvious homage to a Prince song. Queen's Crazy Little Thing Called Love is a pretty obvious pastiche of an Elvis Presley song. Hell, Prince's Delirious is a pastiche of an Elvis Presley song. Like, you see what I'm saying? This feels like an album of those. Now, I can't, like, exactly point my finger directly to it. Like, with Awaken My Love, I could be like, oh, that's a Funkadelic track. oh, okay, that's a Sly Stone track. Oh, okay, you know, I could do it really easily. I can't do it as easily going with straight lines on this one. But that's what it is. It sounds like a 1970s album, and they're doing all the imagery where they're kind of like doing Soul Trains type stuff, where I almost worried that it would sound like a parody. You know, because it almost looks like the stuff in the videos is almost parodies. It's funny stuff, and it's entertaining, but it speaks to the idea that this isn't really serious music, which is fine. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But for me, it is somewhat frustrating that you have someone really creative who could allow this to be like really substantial music, and the other guy's in charge. Like, that's just not how I would have done that record. They do let my man Andy lead things on the drums. Every drum track jumps out because he is a tour level quality drummer. He's just incredible at playing drums. And so his personality and his sound is there in the drumming for that reason. But, and this is an interesting thing for me about listening to music, and not everybody listens to music with the same depth or cares the same way or whatever, but just a thought for some people when it comes to this stuff, talking about listening to music. Sometimes you got to take a record for what it is and not for what it's not. Okay? So I can tell you everything this Silk Sonic album is not. But does that matter for what it is? Now, if I were writing a review or giving you this discussion I'm having now, just kind of as like a, you know, a thoughtful exploration of the joint, then yeah, I could talk about what it's not. But when I put that thing on there and I listen to it, no, what it is goes. And I would also note, A, Bruno Mars could sing his ass off. And B, as far as singing goes, that's like the best I've heard Pac sing before, which tells me that Bruno and his man, I think his name is DeMille, they are really good vocal producers. And so this is something about music. I mean, for those of you who like to get in the weeds with it, that doesn't get talked about that much, is vocal production. And so what I mean by vocal production is, like, think about this, especially in rap. So in rap, people just think of a producer as being the person who makes the beat, as opposed to the person who, like, conceives of all the music, okay? But a very important skill as a vocal producer, as a producer, is to be the vocal producer. Say it like this. Try this. Go to this place. Get to here, right? How do you find the best place for somebody to go? So, for example, Dr. Dre is, without question, the best vocal producer who has ever worked in rap. He's the best. Like, think about dudes, how they sound on Dre records and how they don't sound when they go somewhere else, right? He is the best vocal producer that there has been. I always wonder sometimes with these cats who lean toward hip hop, but also kind of sing, like what kind of vocal production they're getting from the people that they're working with, depending on what that person's background is and all of that stuff and how much they work with people who are actually singing. But this is Pac working with some dudes where singing is what they do. Like, Bruno Mars sings. And it was the best singing that he's ever done. You know what I mean? That's what the record is. And it's enjoyable. And it's a quick little 30 minutes. It's good at night. Depending on the laws in your state, you can enjoy doing a few things. You know what I mean? But I dug it. I thought it was cool enough. Now, if they want to do one where the real talent is in charge, please do that. And I would love to hear it. A whole album of them that basically sounded like Say, Say, Say. You know that song, Gabe, Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson? Say, Say, Say. And the song is Paul McCartney does the verse, just being Paul McCartney. And then Michael Jackson just comes in hot for the bridge. That's what they should do. And they do this, you know, somewhat on this record. That's what it should be. Pac does the verse and then Bruno Mars just comes in all gas, no brakes. Make you feel good. Bring it down for the hook. Come back around. Yeah, go ahead and do that. Because if that's what it is, that is good. I ain't got to hate on it for what it's not. If you haven't heard, it's part of ESPN Nation, brought to you by Dr. Pepper. College football is back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo. This first story comes from Metro. Hey, Bomani, this is Chinaki Mehta from NPR. Philadelphia is now the first major city in the U.S. to ban traffic stops for minor infractions, things like broken tail lights or a missing registration sticker, infractions that aren't considered a hazard to public safety. Now, this new law doesn't change DMV rules. Drivers will still get tickets for these infractions, but they'll be mailed or left on their windshield. Councilmember Isaiah Thomas proposed this legislation, and he said that part of his motivation came from his own personal experiences driving in Philadelphia as a Black man who's been pulled over unjustly several times. Studies have shown that traffic stops do affect Black drivers more than any other drivers in the U.S., and civil rights groups say that these stops are a cover for racial profiling. So the idea here is to ease some of the historical tension between the public and the police by minimizing traffic stops. The Philadelphia Police Department said in a statement they're on board with this law and will spend the next 4 months retraining their officers before it goes into effect. Councilman Thomas told us he thinks this is a step in the right direction to be able to rectify some of the ills of the past.
Yo, I'm not with this. And here's why I say that. If my taillight is out, I don't need you to mail me a letter about it. I need you to tell me. You see what I'm saying? Like, if my brake light isn't working, I need you to tell me that it is not working. I don't need to be waiting until this gets processed and goes through the mail and comes to my house. I need to be made aware of this, right? Now, they had the option on this to say that on those low-level stops, that all you're going to do is tell people what the problem is, right? Like, to me, what is absurd is, if my taillight is broken, why are you fining me for that? You think I want my taillight to be broken? You know what I'm saying? Like you think I'm just out here like, man, bump the law. I just rolled with one taillight. Nobody wants that. Like, that's not a thing. What is the point of doing that? Like, no, no, right? There's no reason to fine people for that. There's a reason to stop and tell people that their taillights are out. But what this is saying is, they have totally given up on the idea that the police can act decently. Right? Like you're just like, fine. The only way that we can stop the police from jamming y'all up is just not to stop y'all at all. Like, for the police to be like, yeah, this is what we wanted, is a tacit acknowledgement of how broken this all is. That you don't think that police are capable of doing something that should, in fact, be their jobs without being jerks about it. Like, that's all I hear when I say that. And that's why I say I'm not with this. It really doesn't make any sense what it is that they are doing. Because the whole point of, like, the broken taillight or whatever it is on a lot of that, the point of it is safety. It's not safe for you to drive around without a taillight working. And you just gonna let me keep on doing it? You ain't gonna put me on game? Now, of course, yeah, there are other ones, and these cops are out here fudging sometimes and coming up with some nonsensical thing. You didn't turn on your turn signal. Like, that one, okay, go ahead and mail that. I guess I see that, but who knows? Your turn signal could also be broken and you don't know it. Like, all these things, whatever. Cool, you go do that. But in the end, the police should be able to stop you and handle that like they do for everybody else. But you just don't think they can, huh? And if you really don't think they're capable of behaving right in this context, you have to be honest with yourself about what you're saying about the entire institution of policing.
Is this a traffic stop like the tamest interaction that could happen between the police and a citizen when the citizen does wrong?
Yeah, it's because you're not dealing with criminals by and large. You know what I mean? Like, normally when the cops have to come into a situation, I guess you've committed a crime by speeding, but no one would call you a criminal, you know? And so you're dealing by and large with like regular folks. Just out here trying to make it. Like, this should be easy, but no, no, no. No, no, no.
All right, this next one comes from business.
Hey there, I'm Hannah Towie from Business Insider. So last week, Portugal passed a batch of labor laws that they're hoping will attract more digital nomads to the country. The new legislation makes it illegal for your boss to contact you after work hours and also requires companies to pay for work from home expenses like increased electricity and internet costs. We've seen more and more countries around the world offer specific visas and additional benefits for virtual workers throughout the pandemic, especially countries whose economies are highly reliant on tourism. But not all of Portugal's proposed protections were approved. The so-called right to disconnect or the legal right to turn off work devices after hours didn't make the cut.
So, like, I get it in large part. The thing for me is I feel like our job, for example, is tricky, Gabe. We do a podcast on Monday, right? Like, there are things that are going to come up at points and things that kind of have to be done on weekends. This is what it is. And I'm assuming that with people in these jobs, there's going to be between boss and employee some understanding of like, look, there's some things that just kind of like have to be done and we got to figure it out, you know, in some time period. Like, but it requires a trust that these people ain't hitting you up on some nonsense. You know what I mean? Like a belief and understanding that I would not do this for no reason. That part kind of needs to be understood there. But what I also have to remember, I don't hate my job, right? Like it's when I hear stories like this, I always have to remember like, damn, I don't hate my job. And I don't really have that many people like nagging at me about stuff. But I do know that some of y'all, it could be anytime, any place, whatever it is. And you know what the problem with that is? It's not so much that they try to hit you anytime, any place. It's that you don't make that much money. Like, if they paid you a little bit more money, you'd be willing to make a trade every now and then on a Saturday. Everybody I know who make a lot of money got to work all weekends. Don't really be complaining about it. You know why? Because they make a lot of money. But if you got somebody that's not making a lot of money, they ain't trying to give you none of their off time, dog. None whatsoever. Because they don't make enough money for that. But the one problem with that is, what you gonna do? Take your, you think this law getting enforced? You think you about to take your boss to, you think they, you about to take your boss to court? You think they about to come write your boss a ticket? Because you will receive a ticket and it will be pink.
All right, this last one also comes from Metro.
I'm Emma Aukerman. I'm a reporter for Vice News. Cities across the country are going to war with urban dirt bikers or adherents to a tight-knit culture, otherwise known as bike life, a community that loves to ride, do wheelies, and obsess over their bikes and ATVs, albeit in the streets. Politicians and police tend to argue that the bikes are noisy, a sign of lawlessness, and outright dangerous. People have died riding, and there are instances of bikers hitting bystanders too. A 4-year-old in Queens was left in critical condition after he was struck by a dirt bike in July. As a result, cops are rounding up dirt bikes in some cities, ticketing riders in others, and even crushing dirt bikes in an apparent show of force in places like New York. Seriously, look it up. Mayor Bill de Blasio was super pumped to crush a bunch of dirt bikes in September. But here's what riders say. No amount of criminalization changes the fact that they love what they do and they want a place to ride. Taking away bikes and making riders pay fines might temporarily keep them off the road, but they're gonna head back eventually. So for years, riders have proposed that cities give them a formal place to ride, a park or a track. There, riders could gather and do wheelies within the law and their culture could flourish in a safer way. Cities are actually decently into this idea. Cleveland, Ohio was really interested in building a park a few years back, but plans to get it done almost always fall through. In the meantime, riders are attempting to show what this new world could look like. Benadon, the founder of Bike Life Sports in Harlem, actually rents out tracks all over so riders can come out for a day, hang out with friends and family, and practice their craft. Hundreds of people roll out each time, he said. And Brittany Young, the founder of B360 in Baltimore, which taps into dirt bike culture to keep people out of jail and provide a STEM education to children, ask people to think of it this way. Quote, what is the one thing that you use to relieve your stress? For people like riders, it's riding their dirt bikes. People on dirt bikes are regular people that have jobs. They're fathers, their mothers, their grandmothers, their police officers.
All right, now, I live in Harlem, USA, so I got some experience with the dirt biking population around these parts. And I will say, it is loud. I will say, it is annoying. And I will also say, I ain't seen grandma the first on one of them dirt bikes. Like, I get where my man is coming from, but I ain't seen them. Here's my thing. Yeah, it's loud. Yeah, it's annoying. It doesn't last long. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like it's just every day somebody's pushing through on dirt bikes. The thing is, they be coming through by the 100. Like, it'd be different if it was just like one guy on a dirt bike or whatever, but they be coming through by the dozens just pushing through. It's whatever. Like I said, I don't like it, but, you know, it ain't that big a deal. But the thing for me with the cops, I'll never forget this, man. I was walking one day. I was on the phone with the homie, and I was over by Morningside Park, and I'm walking. And it's one of them days where the dirt bike boys are out, right? Like, they was just, you know, out here being loud or whatever. And so this one dude is on his dirt bike, and he's filling it up with gas. He's at a gas station. and you got to be dedicated to your craft to pay them Manhattan gas prices. So anyway, he's filling up his tank. And the next thing I know, police pull up. They pull up in the van, swing around in the parking lot, like make an elbow turn, get in, and the boys see him, and they break out, right? They drop the pump, they lead a bike, and they just jet. They run. And so cop get out the car. I can't remember if the cop tried to drive him down by car or whatever, but the cops tried to track him down. Obviously didn't get him. And you know what that meant? Now the cops are stuck with that bike. Now they got to do something with it. They got to impound it. They got to call somebody in. They got to deal with the thing that cops hate more than anything else. They hate two things. Two things. One of them was already checked off this box, which was running. And the other thing they hate, paperwork. They hate anything that involves putting in paperwork. And now you got this bike and all the paperwork that comes with it. All of which was to say, you should have just left them alone.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. Voicemails this week. From the time when you saw somebody or you yourself went out of your way to quit your job like Odell Beckham Jr., how did Odell Beckham Jr. go out of his way to get canned by the Browns?
Here's what I'm saying, all right? And I don't know how much was orchestrated or whatever it was, right? But they say he stopped talking to Baker Mayfield and that he stopped talking to the head coach. And in the end, he wound up going to what we know. If there's any place Odell Beckham want to be, is Los Angeles, right? He winds up landing exactly where it is that he would want to be, on a good team, right? A team that has a legitimate chance to go to a Super Bowl. And so I was like, oh, wait a minute. I think this dude managed to get exactly what he wanted. Like, he showed up to practice, you know, and all that stuff. It was like, yeah, you know, I want to go or whatever. But the team was done. And nah, he was done too. Like, oh, okay. It all worked out. It dawned on me. Sometimes somebody has to just show up at work and decide, I'm going to make them fire me. I figured I ain't seen it with my own eyes, but apparently the people have.
How do you think he's going to do with the Rams?
Oh, I think he's going to do well. I mean, he's got to start now. That's the thing. Robert Woods is hurt, so he's going to be out there. I still think he's good. And so that one thing that offense does is get dudes open.
100. All right, so we had a bunch of good ones. Our first comes from Don in VA. Here he is.
So the time I knew somebody was trying to get fired, I used to work at a local cable company at the call center. And we saw people go in and out quite often for various reasons. But this person, she wanted to get fired. So what she would do, because we had said that we would take mostly inbound calls, but sometimes you would take outbound calls to, you know, dial up the people who, if you lost connection with their phone or anything like that. So she decided to just start dialing. When she would get mad at work, her old disconnected cell phone number that she still remembered. And so she would just dial it, dial it, dial it when she didn't feel like taking calls anymore. So eventually, the call report came out, and they saw that she was kept dialing from those old numbers over and over and over again, and they asked her about it, and they even tried to, like, say, like, well, what's the reason for this? And she was like, oh, that's my old cell phone number. And let's just say that then the response was, okay, so we're just going to let you go. And that's the time I knew somebody was trying to get fired. Have a great day.
So she just, like, if I got to be on a call, I'm just going to keep calling the same number hundreds of times?
And how matter of fact he said, oh, that's my old cell phone number.
Right, right. He's like, oh, loophole. Right, right, right. Am I right? Am I right? Am I... Oh, I'm not. Oh, good. Perfect.
All right. This next one, our guy didn't leave his name, but he said he was working at the Atlanta airport. Here it is.
All right. So what's going on, Bowie Gates? Man, about time. I tried my hardest to get fired from this job, man. So I worked at the Atlanta airport, bro, and I worked for them boys in blue, top flight security of the world. And I've been there for about, you know, 6 or 7 years, and quite frankly, I just got tired of it. You know, the pandemic had came around, and I was just done. So I pretty much called out for 2 months straight, every single day. Not to say, oh, I'm calling out sick for the whole day, no. I call every single day just to be like, hey, I'm going to be an hour late. Hey, I'll be 30 minutes late. Hey, I'll be 45 minutes late. Just because I did, like, for 2 months, I did that every single day. So they still did not get rid of me, boy. So being at that, they put me on the overnight shift, which was actually giving me more money than I was making before. So I was like, at the end of that, I was like, man, how am I going to get up out of here? I'm ordering Uber Eats up to the airport. I'm trying to figure out. I'm sleeping. I'm always where I'm not supposed to be. They still just like, hey, we appreciate you. We like what you do. And I'm like, bro, oh, my God. So finally, like everything, man, all good things do come to an end. I got wind. They was like, yo, we actually might let you go. I said, so you must. But I already had that reservation letter saved in the draft, man. I sent that joke at 5 in the morning on Juneteenth. Told them boys, hey, man, go get you a coffee from the BK. Y'all have a good day. I was out, bro. Holla.
With this labor shortage, it's got to be harder than ever to get fired. Like, as this pandemic has gone and as this labor thing has changed up, like, the number of people getting fired for being late and parking in the wrong space, that's got to be dwindling. Like, what you going to do, find somebody else to do this shitty-ass job? No. Ain't nobody getting less respect relative to what they used to than the assistant manager at whatever place it is that we are talking about. The assistant manager used to have a whole lot more power than they had now. Now that assistant manager get tired of your guff, that assistant manager also better be ready to work that register, better be ready to push that mop. Ain't nobody else coming to do it.
All right, this last one, the guy didn't leave his name or where he's from. It's a good one to close it out.
Hey, Bo, so I got a story about a guy that was trying to get himself fired. Now, I'll be honest with you, I don't know if he actually wanted to get fired, but his actions left him no choice. So we worked at a food manufacturing facility, and on the property we had a building that was annexed to it. And one day we walk in there and we smell something funny. And upon investigating, it would appear that somebody was taking a leak using the bathroom in a back corner. We canvassed the area, talked to everybody. Nobody knew nothing about it. So a couple days later, happens again. Another day, happens again. So now we know we've got somebody trying to use a building for a bathroom. So we ultimately decided to set up a camera, a game camera used for hunters, so they detect movement and anybody that walks by takes a picture of them. Well, sure enough, a couple days later, we look at the footage and there's a picture of this employee taking a leak, relieving himself in the corner. And we got a few different pictures there, and so we take it back to management as we needed to, and dealing with the union shop and the stewards, and let the employee know that we've got to talk to him about this. And I had known the union steward. I talked with the person and said, hey, help this guy out. We've got him dead to rights. Let's not make it any worse than it is. Well, he comes in walking defiant, knowing he did nothing wrong, tells us that, hey, if you've got video, if you've got pictures, I want to see it. So we had to then, poor guy, put on big screen monitor with many females in the room of him holding himself in the corner, taking a leak in black and white, clear as day for everybody to see. And that young man said, thanks. That's all I needed to see. And he walked out. Last day on the job. Thanks, Bo. Love the show.
Yo, did he just want to watch it? And if you got video, produce it. Funny you should mention that.
That's what it sounds like, because otherwise, why would they threaten to say we have videotape of it? I mean, I guess you can bluff that.
Yeah, you can bluff that, right? And he was just like, well, if you got it, show it, right? And the thing, his mistake was, granted, they had the video, you know what I'm saying? But if it was a bluff and you didn't do it, then you would be like, show me what video? Okay, you got video of somebody doing it. I'm telling you, it ain't me. Except he's like, you ain't really got a video. That's how we know you did it right there. Even if you didn't have a video, that's how we know you did it. Yikes. Seems like there would be much more sanitary ways to go about this, but such is life. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thanks to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Jonaki Mehta of NPR. Check out her story on how policing is changing in Philadelphia. Thanks to Hannah Towie of Business Insider. Check out her story about how it's now illegal for your boss to text you after hours in Portugal. And thanks to Emma Ackerman of Vice News. Check out her story on the war on urban dirt biking at vice.com. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. If you only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.